The Effenrad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Season 8 of Effenrad is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, Anon Optics, The Boardroom Snowboard Shop, FindAnEpicAgent.com, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC. Wired Snowboards can work with your imagination to create a one-of-a-kind snowboard with a 3-year warranty. Their Vancouver factory is busy creating hand-built snowboards, and Wired Snowboards are in their 6th season. They've got snowboarding legend Devin Walsh on the team. His board is awesome, by the way. Check it out at wiredsnowboards.com, where you can see tons of examples of custom builds and their stock boards that are ready to ship today. Ask a dealer near you to carry Wired Snowboards. I'm super excited to get a new Wired board this season. It's going to be a Vantage 154 for local mountain all-terrain riding. Buy yourself a Wired snowboard. You'll be stoked. Support also comes from Dakine, Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, Pro Standard GoPro Accessories, and Volcom Outerwear. Please subscribe to, like, and share our YouTube channel. And if you're already watching, thank you so much. DM me and I'll send you something cool. Special thanks this episode to Beneath Base Layer, Capita Snowboards, Union Bindings, Cole Headwear, and thisplaceisawesome.net. Scott Stevens is a professional snowboarder who loves snowboarding more than almost anyone I've ever met. He was noticed for his "how is that even possible" style of riding, and because he's so fun to watch, he's filmed over 20 video parts. This year, his pro model on Capita Snowboards is a tribute to the Andy Hetzel and Noah Selasnik skateboard truck base graphics, done with the help of Jamie Thomas himself, and it turned out absolutely amazing. Scott's creativity has kept him in the spotlight with a solid fan base of snowboarders who can't wait to see what he'll do next. He's a dad, an archivist. You should see his snowboard magazine and video collection. A creative and a really nice guy. Stoked to bring you this interview with the one and only Scott Stevens.
General's a great guy. Yeah, we go back quite a ways too. And it's always fun seeing somebody that's a good friend of Sean's, because, you know, more than 10 times out of 10, they're going to be a friend of mine.
Yeah, I could see you on dynos. That could happen.
I rode one actually before I got on Capita. In 2007, I was riding dynos and it was fun. I rode the board with the Bernie board. I'm sure you guys know Bernie.
Yep.
And I rode the one that says like funk, but it's crossed out. It says fuck or yeah. It's crossed out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's brilliant with his stuff, but, yeah, I'm happy it went the way it did, but dinos I have mad respect for.
Sick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were telling me you started in 94. We don't need to do a full... I mean,
yeah,
you haven't done one, so it kind of feels like maybe we should do that.
Yeah, I mean...
What was the board that you started on?
Well, I loved it. When I told you I started at the end of 94, that it actually surprised you. And, like, that made me stoked because, like, when you're as fanatical about something... you know, like snowboarding, it's fun to have a little bit of roots in it. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
So
94 is deep roots at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like if you look at the history of snowboarding, 94 is still pre like industry standard twin tip stuff. And like people are still experimenting with shit.
Well, let me tell you what my mind can remember me seeing on hill. And this is a hill in Western Massachusetts called Blandford. Or maybe it was actually Mount Tom at the time I was riding. Blandford or Mount Tom. I was seeing Burton Ouija boards. I was seeing Noah's Arks. I was seeing Burton Twins. I mean, let's give it up for Burton. I was loving the Burton thing.
Yeah.
Around that time.
Those Burton Twins were sick. They were a little late to the game because there were some other, you know, like the Joyride stuff was really not totally twin, to be honest, but Ride was killing it with some twin
stuff.
See,
I didn't see many Rides, or it just didn't. I know
it's
that
West Coast.
I know Rides.
It's West Coast. Yeah.
We're not seeing any Mervins, but, you know,
when we did,
we were like, what the?
Yeah, because there were some twin Mervins really early on, too. But there was a real push for it because it was obvious from skateboarding, right? Because we'd just gone through no nose, tiny nose, kick nose, popsicle stick.
Yeah, I mean, I was right into the fat boy jibbing era, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's
sick.
A T-Bolton.
Yeah.
My first board, though, to answer your question, was this is the honest version, was a board called a Crazy Creek. I think it was like a...
It's a Jamie Salter special.
You know of it?
Yes. I think there was a European brand called Crazy Creek that existed for a while, and then the Canadian... Whoever, like, they went out of business, they got bought.
You know the roots. Crazy Creek to me was just like a brand that I wasn't that proud of. But then the following season, or even maybe that season, it wasn't the same season, because let's face it, when you're that age, your parents aren't buying you two.
10 years old, you're not getting two. Yeah.
So it was a Santa Cruz H type, maybe double wide.
Sick.
Had the wood with
the see through. Yeah.
Yeah. The see through. So that was my first. And
that's a great board.
Yeah. And I had Burton, they were called Stumpy boots or Airwalks. I had both. And then I had Burton Freestyles or
sick.
Maybe I can't remember if I or my friend had Ross had the contacts, the baseless Burton ones. Remember those?
Yeah. I sure do. Yeah. That's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great era. That is. For me, I moved out west at that time and was working in
from where?
From Ontario. So
Northern Ontario. There, okay.
Yeah, but we met out here.
Cool.
But Northern Ontario is desolate and cold.
You ride Mount Tremblant? Is that close? Or
you rode it?
I rode it. I rode it. There was a big air contest going on when I was there. I was just a little kid. And I wonder who was there. I wish I knew those what names were running that thing, you know?
You came up from Massachusetts for that? Yeah. Yeah, because people don't really realize how that lines up probably if they're out west.
No.
Is that Ontario and Quebec kind of match up with like upstate New York and New England? Yeah.
I'm speaking for myself, but if you're from Western Massachusetts, you're riding Vermont, Mount Snow, Stratton. So going up to Tremblant was like a once-in-a-lifetime thing as a kid, you know?
Rad.
It was like, we're making a big trip because we're just riding Butternut. And I don't know if you know these mountains, but...
A little.
Yeah. Butternut and Blanford. And when you're Western Massachusetts, like Springfield, like Boston even seems pretty far, you know? So I'll wear a Boston hat, but I don't claim like... live in Boston.
Right.
So.
Right.
And we never go to New York, by the way. Like, my family would never go to New York to snowboard. I don't even think I've ever done it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Connecticut, yeah.
Yeah.
New Hampshire, of course.
Yep.
But, yeah, anyhow.
Were you skating before you started snowboarding? I mean, we're talking about a little kid now.
Yeah,
when
I was
10 years
old. 10 years old. No, I played baseball and I snowboarded first. Yeah, my family was... Like, my dad was an outdoor enthusiast. He ran a company where he took people caving and rock climbing, kayaking and rafting. And skateboarding to them was like kind of like a Bart Simpson type thing.
There was no infrastructure.
Snowboarding was mountains and it was being outdoors. So if you were an outdoor adventure enthusiast, like you were stoked on like snowboarding, you know, because we were cross-country skiing. In like, you know, the early 90s. So snowboarding was an easier transition, and I found skateboarding a few years later.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what kind of snowboarding you're doing when you're 10 years old. You're not watching videos yet.
Well, you know, I was seeing them, but it wasn't like we were saying the MacDog thing. I got the Adventure Scope video at Mount Tom.
Is that your first video?
It's my very first. That's why I'm so that's why
random.
I feel so gnarly about it. Like,
yeah.
Told JP and when I was on a trip with him, I never even heard of that.
Yeah,
you know?
So Adventure Scope, it's Bored with the World.
Yep.
It's a double feature. So what it is...
There's two of them I have here. So I have Shadrach, Meshach.
That's, and Abednego.
Yeah, Abednego.
Yeah. That's insane.
It's pretty cool.
That's insane. So that was peak Jacques. So Jacques Russo, I'll just give you...
Yeah, hook me up.
This is the backup for... This is the background for what you were watching.
Yeah.
Jacques Russo saw snowboarding. Actually, he just wanted... to be an action sports movie maker. And he read a book or he had a like a point by point that he had to do.
Okay.
And he had to find a champion to do a film about.
He made a great film.
And somebody said, Craig Kelly. lives. He got like 20 grand up front to do that movie from an investor. He made the movie. And like, if you watch it, Smooth Groove, it's like, what, 4 days at Hood? Like, it's not much snowboarding. But Jake saw it. Jake had nothing to do with it. But Jake saw it and was like, we'll buy, you know, 500 copies or whatever it was. And then they partnered on Bored with the World.
And then he must have.
Chill. Yeah.
He must have. Did they make Fear of Flat Planet too?
That's him.
Okay.
That's
him. I got some history. I'm learning.
Yeah. So Jacques is from Squamish. And he still makes films today.
No kidding. This dude changed my life.
You can listen to the whole thing in the
show. Oh, you have him?
I have him for one of the Craig Kelly episodes. No, it's Jacques. Yeah.
And then what?
Because he also made Let It Ride. So he had all the archival footage of Craig.
Okay.
So put it together for Let It Ride.
Got you.
Did the interviews.
Crazy. Yeah.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego did not do very well.
No. Yeah. I mean, I loved it. You got to realize my dad just bought it for me at the Mount Tom shop, which is it's closed ski area now, but good memories.
Yeah,
these are
the soundtrack is fun. It's Beastie Boys,
Suicidal Tendencies.
Yeah,
I mean those Huevos Rancheros were all over that fucking thing, for better or for worse.
Yeah, man, that was the heyday of filmmaking.
Yeah,
because if you could make a film, that was why there were three of them.
Yeah,
is that you could sell three different films and three times the money.
Yeah, it's a small world, man, because like I loved that Whistler section. You know, I've never actually ridden Whistler in my life.
You just blew my mind. Are you serious?
I swear, I'm not even kidding. I went up there when I was filming for this Transworld movie, Get Real. I ate a weed cookie at Mark Landvik's house, and the next thing I know, I was fucked for the whole time we were in Whistler, and I swear, my mind is fragile. And
was it on purpose you ate the weed cookie?
I was so drunk, this guy offered, like I was at Landvik's house and this guy came up to me, it wasn't Mark, somebody else, and I took the whole thing when the rest of my friends, Grenier, and I think Jed Anderson was there. Do you know Gary Milton?
No. Anyways, I know
he's
the name.
He's a filmer, yeah.
Yeah.
They all smoke weed and do these things. This was my first time. And they had like a little quarter of it.
Yes.
And I had the whole thing because I wasn't aware of like literally like what I was getting myself into.
You freeze up? Did you think you were going to die?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah.
It really sucked.
That's a classic. Like, I can't breathe. I think I'm going to die.
The paranoia that comes along with it really, it sobered me up for like wanting to hang with my friends with drugs.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, let's do acid. You can't even eat weed. Like, we're using common sense here from that day, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it's not for everybody and it's, you know, and that's not the right time.
Yeah. I'm not going to bash it.
Right.
Like,
right.
But
when you're hammered in the middle of the night. You eat too much and then, you would have had a really bad 48 hours or something.
I'm glad you say 48 hours because sometimes I tell people it was multi-day and they're like, there's no way you were high for 2 days.
No, one time I ate, so I was smoking hash and it was like bumming me out because it was lasting really long. And so it's really potent, just like marijuana extract.
Yeah.
And you can eat it. And so I just ate the last little bit, which would have been, you know, I don't know. It didn't look like that much to me.
Yeah.
And I was up all night sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
And I had to stay home from work and I was up most of the next night and I was still fucked the next day.
Well, I didn't ride Whistler and what I was getting at was that section in Shadrach with both Seth Miller and Seth Neary was like one of my favorite parts in the movie.
I remember when they came to Whistler
film. This is crazy. Yeah. We're having like a
because it made waves. That's the thing. It made waves, and like people were like, "These guys are from out of town." Like,
and I actually, a friend of a friend knows Seth Neary, and we chatted, and I still find it weird when these older pros who pioneered shit like know what I'm doing. I'm like, this is strange, you know?
But it was weird that you listen to the show. I'm like, how is that even possible?
Yeah, I mean,
because I think of you as the youngest generation of snowboarders.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you see and hear what I have, and I know, I know I tick more than some of the snowboarders. Although I did on Grenier's podcast love and Ethan's how Mark McMorris said he was more of a student of the game. I wouldn't have pegged him for that, but just him saying that, I loved it.
Yes, yes. Well, cool. Well, when you grow up somewhere, and this is you as well, right? When you grow up somewhere where you're not in a mountain town and you don't have all that, like, it's very rare that the person that grew up in Whistler becomes the guy at the top, because you move there having been somewhere where you were just dying to go to Whistler.
Yeah, you're just like a caged animal. Yeah, I was definitely, you guys wouldn't, I don't even have the footage to back it up, but I used to get hurt and I used to tomahawk myself into icy landings, and you get smarter as things go on, and your snowboarding evolves for better or for worse. Like I was telling you, some of my stuff, I'll watch my old stuff and I'll be like, it didn't age that well, you know? And I know that. I know that more than, like, dude, the shit I get on Instagram recently, I'm like, fuck, where do people are heartless. But maybe they think I am not evaluating myself. But I'm evaluating myself to the point where, like, when somebody talks shit, I'm like, yeah, I can see some of that.
It's so hurtful. It's so hurtful when it, like, is on the money.
Yeah, or there's a shred of truth where you're like, fuck, well,
that's it. The shred of truth for me is on the money. Yeah. I was exaggerating with my son Bowen, who's 19, and I was like, this guy just trashed me, dude. Like, it sucks. And then I read it out loud, and he gave me 8 out of 10, and he said it was good.
But you took away the worst.
But I was looking, going, well, bomb hole is 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And Powell movement's 9.5 out of 10. And I'm like, holy shit, that's not fair. And so I internalize that shit, and it's a year later, and I go read it again. I'm like, that was a nice review. The guy was actually awesome.
I mean, I couldn't stop listening to your Jamie Lynn interview. It was really nice.
He is such a sweet person.
Yeah, I was in for the ride. It was fun.
That's dope. Well, and he's one of those superstars that influenced other superstars.
Yeah.
Like Devin was admittedly trying to ride like Jamie. Yeah.
That's definitely cool to prop people. I love that. I love hearing, and I even want to just say my guys too, because that's how it works, you know?
Yeah.
Or that's how it's, there's no right or wrong way to do this shit, but the way I like to credit the sources.
Yeah.
And that's.
You guys have to be, I'm just making this connection now. You guys have to be around Bam Margera's age. Because he grew up, when you see Bam, you know.
Yeah, I'm 38. Bam's probably 40, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And he was the early adopter with the video camera.
Oh, yeah.
Filming everything.
Dude.
And you're the same guy, right? Like, how soon into snowboarding do you or your friends have video cameras on each other?
I love that question, because I thought about this recently, and it's funny because at that age in snowboarding, with the accessibility of cameras and it being cold, and you also getting to ride only weekends because your resort's only over the weekends, you don't film. So my introduction to a lot of filming was skateboarding, you know, because it's easy. I'm out in my backyard. I got the damn thing plugged in, if I don't have the battery, to the extension cord.
Rad.
And we're filming skating, you know, like that's, snowboarding was like, oh, dude, I got this 1 360 from 1997 to show people, you know, like that's all I have.
Yeah,
like there's nothing. Yeah. And just so you guys know, I love clips. Like it's an obsession, you know? It's like it started that day in my driveway. With maybe even a boombox playing. So that's like how you're getting your tunes and, you know, and then you're learning how to mix it on an analog mixing board or something. But
like almost like a reel to reel,
exactly. Snowboarding. I don't have much stuff from that time period because, first of all, who are you gonna stop? You're snowboarding. You're going down the hill. Like you don't have time. Like nobody. You're off. You're out of school. You're loving it. You're snowboarding has, like, I think skaters who thought it was too much of a bite of skateboarding are coming around to it now, because they're like, these dudes have the mountains. They have something special.
Yeah.
That's like, they could do the same damn thing over. And maybe you could say that for skateboarding. I'm like kind of losing what I'm talking about right here. But
Was hate. And yeah, like the, but 94.
It's a little bit because I've even seen some of my friends. Oh, yeah. I've even seen some of my friends that were like these skate purists be like, damn, snowboarding's kind of fun. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's great for dudes like us. Yeah. You know?
I think there's a lot more tolerance around these like hard edges that we had when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
Like I was saying with Blaze, it blows my mind. Some people ski and snowboard. Like not like it's like what do you do? Oh, I ski and snowboard. And you go, well,
yeah, that's really? Crazy talk to me.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not crazy for kids these days.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Or maybe I'm talking out of town.
Dog dreaming. Nice. No, you're not. The thing is with skiing, it's just that like I see so many great skiers that are like, they're like, yeah, I get some influence from snowboarders. And I was like, damn, I'm sorry. I haven't been looking the opposite way, but I honestly should because there's probably a lot of inspo we could pull from skiing. But
I had a realization a few years ago that if I learned how to ski, I would probably have a lot of fun doing it. I've gone my whole life thinking that it was impossible for me to have fun skiing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I hadn't said it out loud.
Yeah.
I just was like, that's not fun.
Yeah, I'm stubborn. So if I.
Yeah, I'll probably. I'm too old to learn now.
Yeah, I mean, the cross country phase was like, that almost propelled me into snowboarding more because as a kid, you're not trying to get cardio, you know?
No.
So zero. I was just with my dad and, and my sister. And as soon as snowboarding came along, I was like, fuck, this is not Bart Simpson skateboarding, so I don't have to be like whatever kind of vandal my parents thought I was going to be. But like, fuck, I always credit this, is those, the show GT did, SBTV.
Yeah.
Like when I would see that, I was like, I want to be these people, you know?
That's so rad.
And those were all pulled from the Fall Line films, right? Most of that footage?
Yes, yeah. Totally.
So
I used to always think, oh, geez, if I would have got into it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But no, I would have still been me.
Yeah.
And I would have been riding crappier stuff and I wouldn't have progressed any faster because the thing that kept me from being a professional snowboarder was I didn't have the work ethic and I didn't have the drive to be the best at it or any of that stuff that it really actually takes to do it.
There's a certain level of confidence that I don't even have that I see some riders have. And that's what, like, when you see that,
yeah,
you're like, well, it, like you're going to do some stuff that's really dangerous, you know?
Yes.
And yeah.
And it's not dangerous to them.
No,
I don't know if I'm following
what
you're saying, but like I've stood on top of something with Devin where I'm looking going, this is very scary to me.
Yeah.
And he just blasts it. And then this isn't even an exaggeration. He said, yeah, there's a footage of me one time trying to go over that tree over there. I'm like, oh, from where? He's like, from here.
I mean, somebody.
And then you look at it and you go, You have to be lying right now.
Yeah.
That who would have thought to you couldn't fly that far? He goes, I made it, but it just didn't look very good. And then I saw the footage of it and I was like, he wasn't lying. He like the thing that I was afraid to go off at medium speed, he milked all the mountain to get the speed to hit it as fast as he possibly could and possibly land on a 10-foot transition.
Yeah, I mean, the shit that guy's jumped off and some of that stuff in Whistler that I haven't got to see. I mean, those guys are fucking 60 feet up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real skill for judging speed. And Devin has it from my just watching
it's
him
interesting
in so many videos.
That it's not arrogance. That's the thing that's
fascinating him?
About
no,
it.
You don't
that
get
it's
any
not
of that.
Arrogance. It's just confidence.
Yeah. You know, he's like a great person to reference for who I watched when I was young, and now it's evolved to a person like Zeb Powell, who I'm around a lot.
Oh, sick.
Where, yeah, it's not arrogance. Watching Zeb ride is not arrogant. It's special.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's special. It's like, it's confidence, and it's like, it's, he if he's around the right person, that he can put on a show, you're going to get a great show because he does it for, he doesn't just do it for himself.
Right.
Which is like kind of heroic in a way.
Absolutely.
Because like I've done things on my snowboard that weren't just for me a lot of times.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is going to stoke some people out. And I get that feeling with Zeb when he's riding. He's like, he's doing it for everyone, you know?
That's so dope.
Yeah. And that's where that extra power comes, where you, when you're now, instead of a video part surfing on your phone, you know, that clip of Zeb comes up and you're like,
oh. How?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. I mean,
where did he come from? Like, how are you guys, how are you hanging out with
Well,
him?
That's the cool thing is, and I don't know the Burton thing, but 32, I get to hang out with him because he's full on 32, which is sick. Crazy for Burton to let a dude go halvesies like that. But it is a new world, and I do got to tip my hat to Burton quite heavily for even like being like not head to toe like the old guys or like the my heroes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's pretty cool. I don't, obviously, I don't know the behind the doors with that, but yeah, that's how I'm seeing him. And then, I was at High Cascade. I was a coach at High Cascade forever, so I saw a lot of the young guys come up. The
Rad.
Griffin Sieberts, the Max Warbingtons, the Ben Fergusons, and I would see them, and I would, you know, see a dude do a good method off of 50-foot jump, and I go, that dude's gonna get sick, you know?
Yeah.
Zeb, I saw skating barefoot in 2017 or something, which to me is fucking last year, you know, but it's kind of a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do you get to the point where you're starting to either compete or film things that are...
Oh, we'd have to jump ahead there.
Yeah, so what goes on in between? Is it mostly just like riding for fun type stuff?
I mean, I was always making videos with my crew. And that's why, if I can segue into the Jamie Thomas thing, which I showed you that board, is I have a lot of empathy and for Jamie getting a bad rap because I kind of relate to it. I was the guy making the movies. I would try not to give myself Ender, but I would be in the movie, you know? And
sure.
I would, just like a normal human being, try to look out for yourself a lot. Maybe too much sometimes.
Well, okay, so I can pick your brain on behalf of like the curiosity around Jamie giving him Ender parts, giving himself Ender parts. Like, there's got to be a calculus that you do that you go, well, this is the best part.
Honestly, he's a guy you want to see, dude. It's
I
a hard
never had
thing.
A problem with it,
and,
to be honest.
You know, human nature, there's going to be people that do have a problem with it.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, let's see the numbers. Whose board's selling the best?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, can you just throw yourself in the middle there and people guess that you should have had the end part? There's psychology for all this shit, you know?
Totally,
I think
man.
He just fucking cuts the bullshit. He's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
And he was right for a long time, you know?
When did you meet him? When did you first meet him?
I've never actually met him in person. And that's why it's so crazy. I have a damn board.
Yeah.
That's a signature board. This isn't a board that Capita did a collab with. That's
right.
That's my fucking board.
That's unbelievable.
So we just had conversations about Matt Hensley. That's his favorite dude.
Of course. That makes
and,
a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, that's his favorite dude. He was like, I do this because of Matt. And I was just like, oh, because the thing that's kind of fucked up is when I watch the Nine Club, Roger knows more than I do.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty good in there with some of my old skate history. Like,
sick.
Me and Kelly,
sick.
Obviously, we're similar age. I'm on the 4-on-1 tip. I'm like, yeah, I know that. And I'm just like, God, I got to fill my brain with other things. But I can't. I love it, you know?
Yeah.
So I met Jamie. He reposted one of my tramp skate things one time out of the fucking blue,
dude.
Like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that was fucking weird, you know? And then I'd buy zeros here and there because I was like, I always thought it was weird, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But awesome. And then this is really cool. Chris called me. He's like, hey, I'm having Jamie on the bomb hole. I was wearing a zero hoodie I bought that day. I go, dude, I'm fucking wearing a zero hoodie. He told Jamie that, and that's really what kicked it off.
That's
Jamie
so
couldn't
sick.
Believe, man, I don't want to speak for him, but he was hyped.
Yeah.
Immediately, 2 weeks later, I got a package of zero shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah. We started talking. He just realized that, you know, I'm a big fan of skating and his. And, you know, I'm not like some of the the haters he gets. I'm a fucking fanatic. I'm like, Jamie, chomp on this. My fucking favorite part of yours. He's like, I don't want to hear that, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, Dying to Live is my best part. I'm like, oh, okay. But chomp on this, you know? But anyhow.
Yeah.
One thing led to another. And Capita made the boards with him. I explained to him how I really wanted to do the skate trucks thing to honor Noah and Hetzel in my own way, if people could see it. And he was like, I don't know about that. I don't know if is that cool? I'm like, dude, it's fucking cool. Like,
so cool.
It's cool because you're here and you're a pro skater and you're endorsing it. And I know about these guys and I know about the impact Noah had, you know?
Yes.
It came about. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's sick.
He, just to even take it one step further, those are his slide marks from probably the Pood skate park. He went out for a month straight trying to get these things perfect. And he had front feeble marks on here. I've told the story a lot. He had front feeble marks on it. And he went back and looked at my Instagram. And he goes, you don't do front feebles. And I go, no, I can't really do them. He's like, all right, I took them off. I was like, this guy's out of... I was like, but I can do switch crooks. We should put... And he's like, it's too late. You know? Pretty cool.
I love that authenticity. Because, that was missing from the... Definitely from the Hetzel board.
Yeah.
It was more of a concept than it was an actual, like, you've taken time to make this perfect.
Yeah. And that sticker on top there is the shop sponsor. That's my first sponsor, Theory Skate Shop. And
rad.
Jamie was like, he wouldn't let any other stickers be on the board if they were snowboard stickers, which I thought was funny. He's like, what's a sponsor of yours that's skateboarding? I'm like, well, they've been a skate shop since 1998. He's like, boom, let's put it on there, let's stoke them out. And I was like, dudes are gonna shit their pants when they see the board is on their logos on an actual pressed Capita board.
Yeah.
Without them knowing.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah, he's an amazing dude. He didn't have to do that for us. And also Blue and I were like going through the Zero catalog and we're like, whoa, what board would be cool to do? We're like, I wanted the bloody, the dripping blood with the skulls.
Yeah.
And Blue and I were like, yeah, that'd be sick. We hit Jamie up and Jamie's like, this brand has like almost 30 years of legacy. We can't just put it on a snowboarder, basically. He wasn't down. He was just like, I'm going to design a different board that doesn't. Months passed and he wasn't getting back to us. And we just get the fucking most, you know.
Perfect.
He said, fuck it. He was like, I'm going to give these guys we didn't get the skull with the bloody drip or whatever, but we got the one of the most iconic ones, you know, which is.
Yeah. What a dude.
Yeah, it's pretty.
What a trip to like go from being a kid super fan to being, you know, a friend of this guy now.
Yeah. And we will meet in person someday.
Yeah, of course you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I really wanted to tell you guys that. And just
thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
He did a solid for the snowboard industry, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about it off mic. There was a bit of animosity towards snowboarders from skateboarding. And probably rightfully so.
Yeah, I'm cool with it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there was like Damian Sanders and like the Dayglow.
Yep.
You know, and people couldn't figure out, well, are we going to do hard boots? Are we going to do one in the front and a soft boot in the back? Like,
but like the thing about like, and totally, and Damian Sanders from my little look back library, I mean, this guy fucking ripped. He tweaked in those things. Yeah, he might have gave some of the.
Well, it's the purists, image thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like these, you know, flashy. Like
it was glam
guys.
Rock.
It was weird compared to like skateboarding. Well, skateboarding kind of went through the same thing.
To be honest,
skateboarding and snowboarding, I thought were separated by, you know, like 10 years or something. But 80s skateboarding and 80s snowboarding, they're kind of similar.
Yeah.
In that there all of a sudden is this weird fashion thing going on with Christian Hosoi ripping shirts. Yeah. Or like, you know, the way that someone looked was really important to like, you know, a 10-year-old me in 83 or whatever. Yeah. So that's, more like a 15-year-old me. And you're trying to figure out, like, because I went to camp at Wendell's when I was 16. And most of it was basically trying to figure out, like, how do I actually look like a genuine snowboarder guy?
I mean, that was big to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, call it what you will. Like, maybe not the main focus of snowboarding, but
right.
You want to get in those clothes. You want to feel like you joined the club, you know?
Yeah. Well, at 94 is fat pants. Tail end of fat pants, but like right the dead end of fat pants. Were there fat pants for little 10-year-old kids at that point?
We were rocking some... Nah, you know what? No, because it wasn't super practical and we're not spending our own money, you know? Because I'm 10,
yes,
so like...
Yes.
I'm wearing hand-me-downs of my sister and yep. my dad and my mom and stuff. And a lot of stuff's coming from either Old Navy or... EMS, if an EMS was like a REI type brand, Eastern Mountain Sports, but it's on the East Coast.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And so, do you wind up getting into competitions out there?
Like, is that a thing? I did some contests, yeah.
Or was it more, like, did you go directly into the filming yourself thing?
Well, I was always trying to film, and when I look back on it all, it was just like the snowboarding was like, we weren't putting enough effort into filming the snowboarding.
Right.
So... it was just like, we'd send these Sponsor Me tapes out, and I can see why people weren't biting, you know? They're just like, and I couldn't beat a lot of the guys in the area because I wasn't good enough, you know? And that's just like some of it, just talent, and some of it, a little work ethic. And then as things evolve, you know, you start seeing guys that you're like, whoa, they're taking a different approach, like Jay Brown and Travis Parker and so on, and skateboarding, like I was pulling from both, you know.
Yes.
And the only way you can pull from both is if you're watching things like till your eyes bleed, and I do, and I was, and at the beginning you're copying, you
yes.
know, you're just yeah. copying people, and then as time goes on you're starting to find your own groove. If you're starting to get a little buzz, like you're like, all right, this is working, you know?
Yeah. What was the first little buzz?
The first buzz was Bridges called me because I made a video part, because I love making video parts, and I won this contest with the third Robot Food movie.
Wow.
Yeah, I won the contest.
What was the contest?
It was called Part of a Lifetime, and it was in Snowboarder Mag, and it was in 2004, and the winner got their part in the bonus of Afterlane.
Oh, that's amazing.
And yeah, that was heavy. I have a Robot Food snowboard here, only one of two made, and I should have found it before you guys came, because it's pretty
yes.
shocking to see. I'm sure you even, like, at the age, so I would have been 25, I would have been 20, you would have been 30, you
yeah.
probably loved Robot Food as well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robot Food was new lifeblood into the scene.
I would go to resorts just knowing that this robot thing, food thing happened. And I would just assume people kind of like knew who I was, but they had no clue. But this is the thing when you're a kid, you're just like, you're just so stoked to make a little bit of noise.
Yeah.
Just a tiny bit of chatter.
That's big noise, actually.
Yeah.
Like it is, that is big noise.
Yeah. Bridges called me and he was like, you won. Got in a magazine and that was the first big, big thing for me.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And so that stoked you out. And that part, what, like, give me a breakdown of what was in there.
It was skating and snowboarding, and it was my first trip to Hood. I went as a camper because I broke my back, and
oh shit.
Yeah, well, I told Ross Powers this, but I was at Stratton, and I was doing a lot of toe side rodeos like everybody, you know.
Yeah.
And I just chucked one off a flat lip, and I stayed upside down. But the reason I chucked it was because I was all gassed up because Ross was behind me and he had just won. See, this would have been the year 2000. So he was a big name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Ross Powers? Yeah.
Yeah. And
so you were hyped that he was going to see this?
Hopefully. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, he's right there. I'm going to chuck, you know? And
yeah.
I just stayed upside down and I had a compression fracture. So it wasn't like, but
those
yeah,
suck.
Parents sent me to Hood when it healed.
Yeah.
And that was pretty huge, you know.
And did you go to like High Cascade?
I went to High Cascade.
Yeah.
I think Wendell's actually predates High Cascade, is that right?
Or I don't know which one was there first.
I'm a high cascade guy. I worked there as a coach. Yes. I went there as a camper.
There was a rivalry. I was telling...
Backpack. Yeah. I saw it. I'm just a high cascade.
Yeah. Yeah. The high cascade thing was, you know, throughout the years, as far as I remember, there was a battle back and forth.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
From when I was there in 91, that already existed.
Yeah.
It was friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure.
But by like mid to late 90s, the animosity was real.
I mean, when I was there, I think. But my ego, I thought we were winning, but...
Oh, yeah, High Cascade. No offense, Tim, but High Cascade never allowed skiing. That was the first thing.
Yeah, and
once
you know...
Once they started allowing skiing at Wendell's, anyone who had been, like, kind of rooting for Wendell, you're like, yeah, come on.
You know, the thing is, and it's so fun to talk about because it's all lighthearted, but when you go up there now and the shit has hit the fan and everything is everywhere, you're like, fuck yeah, this feels cool. I'm sure you guys were up there and you're like, fuck, we can ride this park?
Yes.
You're like, that's cool, you know, because like...
It's mental. Yeah, it's mental because for 30 years, you had to pay to go to the camp just to get that level of stuff.
I lived the high life for a little and it was cool to live the high life, and now that it's different, I'm fucking happy for that too, because I mean, I would love to get in that private pipe, but I know there's probably some big dollars in there, and anybody that doesn't understand that, it's like they're not cutting the pipe, they're not dealing with the
you're not paying attention, you're not paying the
bills there. So I'd love to get in that, but the Timberline people that are making that park up there, I went up there and I saw MacDog up there the other day. I saw Jeremy Jones. Yeah. I saw Peter Lyne. Yeah. And I'm like, I know Peter Lyne. I can talk to Peter Lyne. I don't know if he wants to talk to me back, but we had conversations, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm up there and I'm with Andy Wright and I'm looking around at all these things and I'm like, fuck, this place is incredible. And I've lived 22 years of my life on this mountain.
How did you pick Hood as a place to live?
Like my wife completely. Like I was in Salt Lake and I was like kind of one of those Salt Lake, just like, this is all that exists, you know?
Yes.
And
Brighton guy.
Yeah, I was a Brighton guy. And I was just like, this is the only thing that matters. And
when did it become Brighton? Because it was Snowbird all like when I was growing up. I
hardly went to Snowbird. I've been there like a handful of times. But when did it become Brighton? I want to say like maybe, like definitely JP and Jeremy and Seth and maybe the Amped. I wasn't a big Amped snowboard guy, but that was in a video game. So, and I think those dudes just put it on the map. The love hate videos, Mikey LeBlanc, like,
oh yeah.
I mean, it was just, I came to Salt Lake and this crew, SFK, was bumping Simon Larson, rest in peace. And they were running, Brighton, Dave Doman, and really just some fun guys that, you know, came after JP's wave.
Yeah.
And then we transplanted in a lot of guys from Massachusetts and it was just Brighton, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's all you really hear
about. Oh, but, basically I was with met my wife up at Ngovi. She was passing through and then she came to Salt Lake and lived there for a while. And then her dad got sick. So we moved up here and I just followed her. And at first I was like, fuck, I'm better off living in Massachusetts because, like, if you live in Portland, it's not hard, especially when you have two kids. Or three kids or kids at all. What is hard, you know?
Right.
Driving a few hours. But when I first moved here, I didn't have kids. I had dogs. Yeah. So driving to Hood in the rain or whatever, I was like, man, Salt Lake was so easy. Why did I do this?
Right, right.
I did it because of love. I chased after my wife.
Yeah,
and she was up here.
So, when you first came here, were you instantly a Meadows guy? Like it seems.
No,
like-
no. I was a Timberline guy at first. I didn't even know Meadows existed except for whatever MacDog did over there.
Right, because you've seen all the Timberline stuff in videos the whole time.
Yeah, and like, they're both. They're such integral players of.
I find that people that are like my level of snowboarding, which is like, you know, super excited enthusiast guy, goes a lot. In Portland, you're going to buy a Meadows pass for some reason. There's I don't know what it is.
No, it's because Timberline's flat in the winter, and the flatness makes for a great park.
It's amazing,
a great snowboard park in the winter because when the snowboard park is steep, that's that works for certain things.
Do you guys have any idea how rare it is to have groomed powder for park? I mean,
oh, groomed park.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm guessing we're pretty lucky because you know, actually, Meadows makes a great park. Meadows Park this year. I forget what the guy's name is. Some new guys started working there. No offense to the old guys. These guys made a phenomenal park.
Sick.
Yeah,
but we came down one year when the spring passes were $99, no tax for both.
Yeah,
so we just bought both. And there was like a 14-foot pipe at Meadows.
These are some of my cool things is that I get to talk about this pipe every time I post it. I mean, Todd Richards like watches some things. Sorry, Todd, if you find this, don't, not trying to blow you up your scene, but he's like, I want to ride that pipe.
Hell
and
yeah.
And I always I'm blushing because it's fun to talk to Todd about that size half pipe because
absolutely.
You know,
he should have a signature series, half pipe series.
Yeah.
Right. That he announces
18-foot pipe
that, or that there's grudge matches that he goes head to head with Terrier just for fun.
Oh my God.
Right. And I don't even think 18 is still a little
18
too
is
big.
Actually 18 is actually when you get in it.
Yeah.
And you're a guy like me, that's like, I can ride transition, but I'm not Otterstrom, but I'm not just a jibber. It's, you can get messed in 18.
Oh, still. Hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah. 14 to 16 is this sweet, 12 for me, like even a 12.
Well, I think I rode a 12 at Mammoth and it was almost harder.
See, this is the thing. Yeah. I think it flattens the curve. So I don't think McMorris could beat some of the guys from when 12s were real because they're
so
McMorris? I don't think McMorris could. I think
in pipe?
Yeah. I think it would be so hard for him.
Yeah.
It's like riding half a pipe.
He's a chameleon. He can kind of turn it on anything.
It's true. It's true.
I will say, like, yeah, if you put Zeb in it, I'm not trying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he can adapt to be like the number one slot in a pipe like that, you know?
I think, yeah.
Because I watched him at Mammoth and I was like,
well, that was the era when, I mean, maybe it was a little after Palmer, but like Palmer was Terrier before Terrier. Like just big airs, you know.
I see the faucet photos of Palmer and it sucks because I know how much Sean did for the sport, because if you go back to the Tahoe days, it's like kind of crazy to see him a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I caught Sean. Obviously, I saw bits and pieces of him at that Red Bull Big Air, the first Red Bull Big Air. And
yep.
But we're doing one footers, actually, you know. And
Right.
And I caught him mostly when he was border cross. I'm not like, that's awesome now, but back then I was skipping. Big Mountain in Massachusetts. I was skipping Big Mountain parts, and I was border cross. Wasn't, you know, I was
kind of ashamed of it a little bit when I was younger, and now I'm like, that's just what we were.
It was dope. It was dope. I mean,
yeah. Going back and seeing it now, the things that we were skipping, it's kind of like, holy shit, that was actually pretty impressive what was going on there.
Well, what happens right when those guys come to Baker for the slalom, like everybody's like, oh no, but they're fucking fast.
They're fast.
They're fast.
They're fast.
They're not like a different like species that shouldn't be able to race it. They're just fucking fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're on special boards or something, but
I think I said it on to Blaze yesterday on Mike. No, I said it today to Jeremy Jones.
You're talking to Jeremy.
Yeah, we just randomly.
He's still up here?
Yeah, Brad. We were like, fuck? No, not that Jeremy. Jeremy.
Oh, he's up here.
Yeah. Still,
oh, shit.
Still the right.
Yeah, still
same. Same. Like, whoa, he's up here.
Yeah.
That's awesome. He's up with his family and just catching snow and
Mount
doing
Hood,
the same.
Dude.
Yes.
Only place you'll see these fucking snowboard celebrities up there.
It's this giant, like, magnet to everybody.
Well, just hang out there in the winter and you won't see any of them.
Nobody. Even in the spring. Like I said, this spring pass is $99. Nobody's there. June 1.
Skiers now.
Oh, really?
That place is, like, skiing is hot, dude. Like,
Yeah.
And maybe that's our fault as snowboarders for not making it look interesting or...
Yeah, it kind of goes back and forth, doesn't
it? I was in the lift line at Timberline last year in the spring, and I was just getting fucking pinged off the head by snowballs like I was a fucking like nerd.
No, come on.
By skiers, and I was like,
come on.
It fucking switched.
The last time we did a spring trip, was maybe it had been two or three in a row where the skiers were dominating those parks.
I want to say, though, that I wasn't mad at it. I was just like, oh, the shift.
Were we mad? We weren't mad. We were bummed that we were there with when they put more woo on the jumps.
Of course, yeah.
That was the only thing. It was like, oh, this isn't as fun for us, but we understood. These guys were running a train on the park so close together and doing so much insane shit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to start like a skier revival, but I think it's already in motion.
Yeah.
But fuck it, let's suppress us for a little and then we'll come back.
Of course we
will. Yeah, because I feel like I've heard maybe Genevieve's talk. He's like, yeah, skier rivalry is sick, you know? It's like,
well, I asked Palmer,
it's fun, you know?
Because Palmer won skier cross when he was doing the border cross thing.
Yeah.
And I asked him like, oh yeah, that was just to take the piss out of him. He's like, no, I kind of like skiing. I grew up skiing. I know how to ski. I'm a good skier. And I was like, it sort of broke my heart a little bit.
At that back then, it would have broke mine. Yeah. And now it's almost just like, it's like, this earth's got a lot to offer. Yes. He's going to go for it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you can race against Olympic level skiers and win,
like, yeah,
you may as well.
Yeah, let's face it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, he's a badass dude, man. Yeah. Definitely. I'm stoked that he was an influence for you. And now when I think about how often and how early in snowboarding his foot was out of his bindings. It was nuts.
Yeah, there's some iconic photos that like I couldn't recreate if I tried.
People couldn't ride with both feet in at that time very well.
Yeah, and it has gotten to be a crutch for some of us. For sure, because, you know, there were times when I was snowboarding where I had some other shit I should have been learning, and I was just so pegged in.
Kind of like a backflip or whatever, like we were talking, Chad was saying about judging Supernatural.
Yeah.
Backflip's not a trick.
Yeah, it's quite easy, to be honest, in powder.
One-footed backflip, when Craig McMorris did it, I was kind of like, well, that's crazy.
It's not easy. No. Yeah, it's not an easy trick.
You've done it?
Yeah, I've done it. Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you some lineage of that trick that I know of. So.
And sorry for not knowing that. I'm sure I saw you do it first. Just the last person I saw do it was McMorris.
This is actually right up my vein of like, of OCD.
nice.
I remember seeing Josh Dirksen do it.
Sick.
So he would have been you should talk to Dirksen, say who you saw do it first.
He's another one of those.
But
yeah.
I want to say Dirksen was the first person I ever saw do it.
Sick.
And then followed by the next person I ever saw do it with, Dirksen was a melon grab, one footer. And the next person I saw do it was Christoph Weber. Was that his name? Who's the dude in the robot food movie? He was kind of like a...
I think you're Weber. Right.
Yeah. I saw him do it with an indie grab. So I saw him do it in Indie Grab, and I think I tried one a year later, and I would have been on an earlier phase of that trick,
yeah,
for sure.
Course.
But like everything, I didn't do it that big, so I mean that's what tricks are there for. There's people that set it in motion, and I wasn't even one of them. I guess if I was in the earlier stages, I would have been. But tricks gotten done double by Bodie, Scott Vine. I mean, that's crazy shit. Craig McMorris is amazing at one footers. Tadashi Fuse doesn't get a lot of credit.
Oh, that's sick. That's
like,
a nice
he
name.
He does
here.
Some. He was, I mean, Engelsman,
yes.
Meltdown Project.
Yes.
Front 3 1 foot in the Meltdown Project.
That's true.
I mean, that was.
Yeah.
Followed by another person, Jesse Burtner, was doing front 3 1 foots and Bodie. And,
it always looks so insanely dangerous.
Yeah,
but that is, you know, you're kind of categorizing that category. There you go. You can, with those guys.
Yeah, they're not a bad list to be with.
Great list to be with.
I think a lot of those guys, not me and Bodie, but they didn't abuse it. Bodie's the best about it because he takes it to a level that is pretty much going to be hard for anybody else to ever get to, and he still thinks he abuses it. We want him to abuse it because if there's going to be a double cork done with it, it's probably going to be Bodie.
Oh my God. I can't even believe that's where we're at now. Is that could potentially happen?
You know, honestly, I don't think right this second, that is, just because a lot of the younger guys, they're just it's deemed as uncool, like how things go. You know, it takes 5 to 10 years for some of these trends to die.
And yeah, then,
to somebody to get in there and be like, fuck that, I'm going to do it.
Blaise Rosenthal told us last night before we started recording that the jib era had completely died out.
Right now?
No.
Oh.
Way back when.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Kurt Heine was...
Yeah, Heine's a legend.
...was, you know, calling him all the time, saying, dude, let's go film. And Blaze kind of knew he wasn't like the top level guys that would get the good day calls.
Yeah.
So, and he also knew if he didn't go for the bad day calls, Heine would crew up with somebody else and that would be his new good friend. And then that guy's going to get the footy.
I mean, that's
so
still happening.
So he went with Kurt one day, it's pouring rain, and he hit a rock jib and he hit the roof of Timberline. Yeah. He hit the roof of Timberline. And one other jib shot, and they submitted it to MacDog. MacDog said, there's no way I'm running the roof jib because I just need to keep that relationship with those guys.
Oh, wow.
And they don't want to see that shit.
Let's get that shot out there.
Yeah, we got to get that shot out there. Right. A MacDog shot of Blaze. Yeah, like a Heine shot of Blaze on the roof. I'll see if he can dig it up. That'd be so sick.
Well, we should stop real quick because there is a video that Blaze was supposed to be in that his name's on the box. And as a kid, I was a big fan of Blaze and still am. His name was on Technical Difficulties, and I don't think he has a shot in it.
Oh, that's so weird.
It's right over there.
Yeah, grab it.
Yeah,
grab it.
If you look behind there, I think Techno Difficulties is back there.
And he doesn't have a part.
I mean, let's hope I'm not like embellishing because
Tech Diff. He was talking about Technical Difficulties.
Is his name on there?
And Simple Pleasures.
Yeah, he's not in that movie or doesn't have a part in it. And I remember.
Yeah, he might have like shots, but no part.
Yeah, right, I can't remember him, but yeah, if he watches this, he'll. Yeah. I mean, we're in like a realm of.
I love it. Yeah, no, that's sick. So yeah, anyways, the story was that because he had these three shots of jibbing, and you know, like Jeremy and JP,
they were owning shit.
Were tight with MacDog, and MacDog was like, "Dude, jibbing's coming back."
Yeah.
So as soon as MacDog says it, and you're trying to get your MacDog part, you get back on what's gonna happen. So like that might have he might have been the spark for those guys getting back to, like, jibbing is back.
Yeah, because it really did go out, right? It was like...
It went away.
Big Pants, 94, yes. 95, 96, yeah. No, 97, 98. Let's get it back, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it.
Yeah, it came back with a vengeance, too.
And there is a slight bit to it right now that... some of it's not as interesting as it used to be. Right,
well,
this second.
Well, it's gone so far too. Like with the X Games Real Snow stuff.
I know those guys went. They went bonkers.
It's like impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to at Frank Bourgeois. I'm probably saying that terrible.
No, that's
but
right.
I mean,
yeah,
that dude did some stuff. He's in a Bodie category where they breezy, you know, Lewiff in his own stylish way.
Oh,
you
my
know,
God.
Those guys went
Lewiff. Yeah.
Yeah, that was some special stuff.
Yeah.
We'll see it again. It's going to be a bit.
It goes in cycles.
But, you know, if you, and it's ironic that I'm wearing this right now, but if you do watch some of the Dustbox movie, those tricks are in there. They're just not every trick. Those kids can do some sketchy shit, but it's just not every trick. Like a Dan part would be every trick, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So in your timeline here, we're basically at the beginning of, so you've won the Afterlame contest.
Yeah, I got you. I want to.
Do people come out of the woodwork at that point and say, you're on our team now?
I got one Burton board
from a rep.
Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
I got a Burton board and just so happened to be the first year Jeremy Jones was on Burton.
Was it that the.
It was like a night, or no, maybe it wasn't a night. It was a shakedown year. I had that shakedown board.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Loved it. Grenier was riding for Academy. I just met Chris, and he got me on Academy. Met Chad. Chad helped me out. We filmed videos, and I was also had just got a job at High Cascade, so I met Bertner, and Think Think was huge.
Oh yeah,
Chad Think Think.
Yeah,
and then Think Think, because you got to remember at that time, if you're not in one of these 20 movies coming out.
Yeah.
And Think Tank was one of them that was getting bought at shops. Maybe not every shop, but like...
It was big.
It was a huge... Got to hit Backcountry Jumps too, and they weren't big either, but like I haven't done that since I was with Think Tank, you know?
Really?
Yeah, no. I mean, I got to do some... Try some 1080s and land some Cap 9s, and that was only with Think Tank. Like, I'm not going to go do that with anybody else, you know?
Right, right.
You know, but we're living in an age right now where, like, it'd be pretty damn cool to see a Dustbox kid hit a backcountry jump and do it. And they can. They yeah. can do way more than that. But, like, every time you'd see a Jed Anderson hit a backcountry jump, you were like, whoa, yes.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah. Well, so. It's kind of like that next generation for, you know, if you go back far enough, people will say, we used to have to do moguls and slalom and all that. And then just after that, you used to have to be good. Like an Otterstrom was great in the pipe,
mm-hmm.
backcountry jumps, hips, like anything where you go in the air.
Totally.
That was his thing. There was no like specialization.
Well, he had that front board down that kink too. That was pretty early on, too.
That's true. So you kind of had to be a well-rounded guy. JP and Jeremy, exactly that.
Dude, so like, true.
Killing it.
And that's where I come along a little bit into like the, like where some of the TMs and people giving me stuff were like looking at me like, man, you know, but it was changing. It was like a changing of the guard where it was like, look at social media now. I mean, fuck, the doors were just little by little getting just fucking unhinged.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky to be a part of that because there's no way you're taking me and Romain out somewhere. Like, that just wasn't happening, you know?
It's cool to hear you talk about it because you never were hiding that.
No. I want people to know that, like, I'm a fan of these people, you know? Like, when I was up at Hood... one of the mid-2000s and I had Giggy airing over me doing a hand plant. I was like, I don't deserve to be in this photo with this guy, but fuck it. Like,
yeah, you know? Yeah, you at do. The time, you did earn your spot.
Yeah,
you
no, earned your I mean, spot. It's been a fucking journey.
Yeah. It's been not the easiest path to take, right? Like,
no, but I also like wouldn't be here without like a lot of my friends because I was going to do it anyways. Do you see some of these guys that are going at it alone?
Yeah.
Fuck, I was with a crew of dudes that want to do the same thing as me.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
Like that's a pretty common tale, but look at the guy that doesn't have that.
Yeah. Well, that was Jim Rippey. Jim Rippey evolved in a bubble. He saw the Burton guys at his home mountain when he was a lifty.
Yeah.
And then he kind of just did it on his own.
Respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad respect. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, everybody's got their own way of being in, especially in snowboarding. There's no one path to take.
Funny you mentioned Jim Rippey because Jim Rippey would have been one of my early Burton catalog heroes reading through those things in the mid-90s. And Jim was... he was easy for me to understand.
You're drawn to the quirkiness.
Yeah. Hawken was actually almost harder for me in those early days. Where
I understand. Yeah. Where, he was a champion guy.
Where Hawken now, people try to copy him over and over again.
Right.
And he's still the best at being Hawken.
Yeah. Nobody has. Not
where
even close.
I got so caught in the early stages of the resurgence of rail riding, you know? So yep. Hawken, I was like, he doesn't touch rails. What's, you know? And he probably knew that. He was like, I don't like him, you know? And he says it, but
yep. Yeah.
Anyhow. Yeah. Jim was like super early days. Like I just loved it, you know?
Yeah, man. He came out of nowhere. Like if you're a Burton fan.
Yeah.
I wasn't even a Burton fan. I was a fan of like him in those early, you know, TB movies.
Yeah.
When he just kind of came out of nowhere. He replaced a kind of Damian Sanders guy with the backflip thing and the kind of lone wolf thing. Like I've heard the story, and maybe it was in a movie or in a magazine, that people would just see Damian riding, no filmer, no nothing, and he would hit gnarly shit and backflip it and just like because that's what he liked to do.
I mean, how much do you love that story?
The best.
Yeah, it's a cool story.
It's the best thing ever to think of him as disconnected from the marketing machine that would create someone like that, like the pressure to do flips and stuff. If he told me about his McDonald's commercial. McDonald's put snowboarding in a commercial so early on in the thing that Damien was the guy that they picked. Wow. And the shot is basically a cameraman. Damien shoots through the shot because they thought he was going to just like drop off a cliff, and he went like a million miles an hour off it. He shoots out of the shot. It's so fucking huge. They try and follow him. They can't even follow him.
I mean, fuck, you throw like a person that knows how to film snowboarding in the cold weather.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking, you know.
You still might miss a
up
shot.
Up to their waist. You throw a McDonald's person out there trying to do a commercial. You ain't
no idea. Yeah. They had no idea. And they still had to run it because it was just like he couldn't do it again. I think like he did like a 100-foot cliff to flat, you know? Yeah. Like he was like hurt.
Yeah, these guys are icons to me. Like
me too.
I specialize in 97 to.
So what's 97 MacDog?
Simple stuff? Pleasures.
Simple Pleasures.
Yeah, and so, you can't forget Kingpin too.
Oh, and Kingpin, right? Yeah, sure.
I mean, Mike though at MacDog, I mean they had me pegged.
Yeah.
Like Kingpin was awesome.
Yep.
But I was always waiting on the MacDog.
Yeah, I don't want to say Kingpin was off-brand. They were well, top
now,
tier.
Now it aged pretty damn well.
Yeah, I would say it almost did.
Well, hey, let's actually talk about who aged the best. And that's those TV movies right there.
Yeah.
Those TV movies are shocking.
Yeah.
You put those in and you're a kid now.
Yeah.
You're like, maybe some of the songs a little off, but The Big Mountain, it's got the scope. It's like hard to think people are going to make better films.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Well, they had unfettered access to Alaska.
Dude, some of those turns they do. I'm the worst at turning a snowboard on film ever in powder.
Yeah.
One time I was at Brighton and I was with Eastone.
Yeah.
And Eastone comes down with like a 60-pound camera bag on and does a better slash than me. Like, I get too excited. I'm excited for the fucking 50 to 100 tries I'm going to try something. So when I have to do something once, I blow my opportunity because I'm fucking such a fucking blowhard. I'm too excited, you know?
I love that. Yeah. That's so rad.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I saw that Noah shot in, I think it's TB2. It's in the intro and he's coming down. And the thing is that Noah nails it. I think he's got a front three, kind of natty front three in it, and a lot of turns. But the filming is so insane. Like, if you've ever tried to film anything...
It's fucking impossible.
It's so hard. And they nailed it. Yeah. And this is Noah just riding around like a wild person.
Yeah, there's this shot of Johan Olsson in...
TB5.
Yeah, well, it's... That part is fucked, but that part I didn't see because I didn't own it. I had TB7, I think.
Okay.
And I know we're working like a little bit up when all those other films were so iconic.
Yep.
But
yeah.
Johan does this toe side turn and I recorded it off a television screen and put it on Instagram one day. This thing was getting shared everywhere. So it was basically one of the best filmed turns in powder on his belly, just like, and I was like, whoa, I just started a fucking viral clip. fucking 25 years ago. You know, you kind of like think to yourself, you're like, damn, like it's got to be a better way to like watermark footage of who filmed stuff, because like the filmer really gets the shit end
of
the
stick. It's a blockchain. It'll happen. It's gonna happen eventually, but it's a lot of work.
I mean, I don't want that, like, to but I do film a lot, and it sucks when you don't get credit for something.
Hell,
you know?
Yeah.
But that's a whole other can of worms. That's like almost like
there's an integrity there that you could pay the people.
Yeah.
Or not use their clips.
Oh, with social media now, it's really fucking crazy.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's absolutely nuts. But I actually heard from MacDog's wife that they scrubbed the internet of bootleg MacDog stuff because they're going to do their own channel.
You already did.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're all up. Yeah. It's just hard because, those bootlegs got a lot of views.
Yeah. Totally.
It's too bad. I heard a story that he was having trouble getting music rights that he paid for. I was like,
I could see that.
I was like, damn, that's a fucking
I could see that. But because it's so long ago and the people that they made the deals with, maybe it was a handshake deal. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Yeah, there was a whiskey documentary that I saw because I was, you know, hanging around with Kearns a little bit that was made by an MTV producer or something, and it had the Jackass guys in it.
Wow.
And it had archival footage and everybody talking about everything.
That sounds messy.
It had everybody in it. It yeah. had everyone in it. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it got kiboshed for music rights because MTV tried to put the music right ownership onus on Sean and Sean. And then they just gave the contract to a lawyer. The lawyer said, yeah, you're fucked. You've got the Who in there. Yeah. Like that one song alone.
I mean, I made a movie with Burner and we just went YouTube style and yeah, we cherry picked songs. It was fun as hell.
Yeah.
But YouTube cleared it and hopefully those artists are getting paid, you know, by, I mean, how rad is it when Cokehard and those guys make their own music?
That's so rad.
But man, I don't play musical instruments well,
right?
But I love music. I didn't even know how much I love music till I found myself in front of the Hard Rock or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Rock and Roll one in Cleveland.
Oh wow.
I was in there and I was just like, holy shit. But because just like snowboarding, learning the history of snowboarding, I was learning the history of fucking punk rock and hip hop and R&B and soul. And I was like, holy shit, dude, you know, like,
yeah,
that's why I haven't really like even tried to play an instrument because I love listening so much. But anyways, that's why, that's another thing with editing, like, because one thing we really didn't talk about is I love editing so much,
which is rare, right? Yeah. Like I hated editing when I first did this thing.
I don't know if I'd like your style editing.
I find it like calming now. Uh-huh. Like I can do it, but I wouldn't seek it out. Like I couldn't do it as a job and lose myself in it, I don't think.
Interesting. Yeah.
But actually that's not entirely true. I took a film class in high school and we had the reel to reel. Like you'd put one video cassette here, one here, and you had the two dials and you could do the cuts and transfer. I loved that shit.
Yeah.
That is really fun.
Yeah, I mean,
but you love it.
Like I do love it. I what I can reference right now, because this one struck a chord with me, is I was listening to Jib Girl's interview.
Yep.
And she was talking about Instagram edits in particular. And she was like, I think she basically said she has a song in mind. She goes out to get the snowboard clips just to put them to the song. And I've done that shit where I was like,
yeah,
well, of course I want to snowboard, but this song's so good, I got to level up a little, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and I like that. That's dope. So when does the Instagram thing hit for you?
Is it
pre-career? It's obviously post.
Oh, no, it's after because I had done several Think Tank videos from 2006 to 2012. I did Think Tank videos.
That's 6 years of videos. So you're filming a part every year and you're a regular snowboard pro guy at that level getting a part.
Well, I actually did a Capita movie in between there and I did a Transworld movie.
Yeah.
And then after I did a Videograss movie.
Wow.
And I did the Union movie and a 32 movie.
Are we adding years here? Like
we're up to 16.
Yeah.
So from yeah, so there was a lot of video. It was a video part a year for sure. Like, but I mean, Jeremy and JP and my heroes, they did the same shit for 20, you know?
Of course.
But I was also, the thing with our era of snowboarder after them was we were doing web edits too.
Right.
Where those guys would only be seen in the video part, which I loved.
Totally.
To just see Kevin Jones show up in a video part and that's all you see of him.
Yeah. The web edits, I remember some DC web edits early on where I was like, this is last week.
Yeah.
Like, we're fucked.
Yeah.
This is happening.
On the same topic of conversation, I remember specifically when Instagram allowed 15-second videos and I go, shit. Didn't change anything really. Followed by the next year, a minute long. That changed things quite drastically.
So you know that year.
I remember it. I was in Salt Lake and I was just like, and I'm not a big fan of change, but you have to adapt your formula, and it came in like a hurricane, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a few years later, you know, I mean, hats off to people that stay the course of the video part, because you don't really need to right now. It's actually like can be counterproductive and counterintuitive with how much it costs.
Yeah, how much it costs in your body, how much it costs of your time.
And you're gambling. And let's face it, like the analytics are fun for companies and for people that are doing good.
You just go, these are the numbers. This number equals that. But you know what's happened in snowboarding media, at least like way back when with the magazines, is that the numbers were all skewed. They're all like just kind of bullshit.
I mean, that would be really sad if TikTok and Instagram were spewing shitty numbers.
I think that there's like the big companies. Eastone told me the other day, he's like, don't pad your numbers because they know.
Yeah.
Those guys have some sort of number scrubbing program.
Well, the bots thing, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny with social media for me because I can put some effort into something and I generally know like where it's going to fall number-wise.
How many followers do you have?
I think
we just looked it up.
Like 140.
140.
Yeah.
000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty insane. Awesome for snowboarding.
It's incredible for snowboarding.
For snowboarding, especially. I mean, I don't get paid anymore having it. I'm sure it helps me. I'm sure it helps me maintain being 38 and being a snowboarder.
Yeah.
But the thing that I like that's funny about it, and I always joke about this, I joked about it with Desiree a lot, is that like I'm like this fanatical snowboard guy that's kind of a fan of all the guys that's kind of on the inside.
Yeah.
And there's no way Instagram's going to verify me with a blue check, but that's kind of rad in a weird way because it's like you see the blue checks running around and there's like a little bit of like, I don't know. Do you guys see them on Instagram, the blue check? And you're
immediately
like, well, that'll look cool to my relatives, you know?
I mean, I've got like 2,200 followers.
But wouldn't it be cool if your podcast had a blue check next to it?
I've never even thought of it.
No,
I don't think it would.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's that many people that this show, it's not good enough to get in front of them.
All right.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, I mean,
I would be embarrassed if that many people heard the way that I am taking it not that seriously.
Yeah, I found you.
Yeah, that's rad because you're a fanatic.
Yeah.
Because you're a fanatical dude.
Well,
you would love to have the blue check.
No,
you're saying?
No, actually,
I think it's better that you have.
I don't get paid to have the blue check.
So many followers, no blue check.
Yeah.
And it's kind of insane.
I don't really know what I'm getting at, but I made a joke with Desiree because she got the blue check.
She got the blue check.
And it was like a Seinfeld moment where I was like, hey, you want to give me the blue check? I'll take the blue check. Of course, I'll take it. Like, if you want to give it to me, I'll, you know, but I don't want the blue check, but like, of course I'm going to take it if they, you know.
Oh, hell yeah. But, right.
It's like it reminds me of a Larry David thing, you know?
Absolutely. One of the things about Larry David that blew my mind is that he's never taken a photograph. He's never used a camera.
That is funny.
He's never taken a picture of anyone. Isn't that like a totally Larry David thing?
I mean, I can't relate to it. Every time I'm on Hill, I'm
You're the opposite. I'm the opposite.
Video and
we probably shot every run that we
I'm
did
I'm annoying.
Today.
I get it from my mom. My mom has scrapbooks all over the place, so I developed it with video. And I get it, dude. Some days I am annoying.
We're super fans. That's the thing, is that we're super fans of the things like people like you have done.
Yeah.
And we want to do our own little one.
Yeah. It's just like I'm in too deep now to be worried about like... I do get, it is upsetting when I'm like, I find somebody that's funny. Like, that's one of my favorite things is when my friends are funny. Joe Sexton is actually so funny. We're on trips together. I start filming him a lot.
Yeah.
And then you get that point where the dude's like, stop filming me. I hate that. I hate being a nuisance to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
But I like getting a shot where like, we're both like feeling cool. It makes life worth living. I like getting the shot where when I'm on Hill, when I'm useless as a rider, where I get a shot of another rider and we're beaming, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's just that's a cool experience.
Oh, I'm 100% on
and
that tip.
It's authentic for me. Like that's, I I fucking love that.
Yeah, I pulled out my phone with Devin this year and just filmed him. Walsh. He's carving around.
Oh, so you're just riding with Devin. That's cool.
I'm lucky. Yeah, I'm lucky awesome. Because he never lives him, where really. where we live, and he rides where we ride. And for some reason, he lets me film him. He probably let anyone film him, but I just like jive with him.
Yeah.
Like I jive with Jenna. Like yeah. I jive with anybody. And you could see on the film, like as he's just carving. He's carving towards the camera, and just like the happy look on his face.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite thing for me is if it's somebody like Alex Oshu, who used to.
Yeah, you know, I remember Alex. Yeah, yeah.
He put together parts.
He was in some Kingpins and some whiteouts, maybe.
He's legitimate. Like he's one of those guys that moved to Whistler and really made it happen. But he hadn't filmed in so long, and it pushed him, and he did a stock inverted 5. Like, it's just like textbook.
Oh, his era?
Yes.
So they had that thing. That's like fucking riding a bike.
Yeah, where the board is pointed exactly the right direction. Yeah. I was like, that was just textbook, Alex.
Yeah.
And the happiness afterwards.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, thanks for filming that. I'm like, dude, thanks for doing that. Like,
yeah, you got it. You got the bug too.
I love it. I love it. I love it more than getting a clip of myself, I think.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I think I'm pretty selfish. I like both. Hey, but at least on that note, I know what it's like to shoot another rider a lot.
Yeah,
you know, and take dope. And I will never walk on a rider because of how long I take to get tricks. So that's like a little like oath I have with myself.
So well, you've watched Bomb Holes,
yeah,
and Grenier's getting amazing at like I mean. People's parents are asking questions.
Yeah, he has me ask a lot too. Yeah, he doesn't know anybody.
Yeah, yeah. He knows about the person.
He does.
He goes deep in his research. And I actually got into this sort of through stand-up comedy. And I got into stand-up comedy through Mark Maron's podcast, What the Fuck? Like
okay.
WTF. That's why F and Rad, it was kind of like, I want to put fuck in the name because I can.
Yeah.
And because, yeah, fucking rad, like it comes up, you'll hear people say it. And it was kind of a warning to people that were going to listen that you probably don't want to listen to this if fucking rad makes you upset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can relate to your thoughts about your own podcast a little with... Sometimes you need a creative outlet that you don't want to be cutthroat.
Right.
And I don't know. Is that what I'm getting a little
dude,
bit?
Dude, I was...
You just want to do it because it's...
The thing was, when the Bomb Hole came out, like, I'd been operating in the space relatively alone.
Boot Pack, I mean.
Right?
Yeah, because you kind of...
Boot Pack.
Yeah.
And hey, there was the Not Snowboarding podcast.
Yeah.
And they were trying to do...
Oh, I think I did.
Yeah. But they just weren't consistent.
Yeah. Well, this is really fun that I'm not on Chris's because... And I mean that in a way, Chris, if you hear this, is that I can talk about you because it would be weird.
Yeah.
And the thing about Chris is I know him really good. He's a really close friend of mine. He was in my wedding. He's incredibly hard worker.
Oh,
like
you can tell.
Like, he'll say he wasn't a good snowboarder, but if you watch his 2015 Real Snow, when he fucking... is a good snowboarder.
Oh, he's an incredible snowboarder still now.
But he had to work extremely hard.
Yes.
And with the podcast, this guy, he's like so close to me that like I don't even call him because I know how busy he is, you know, unless I really had something I wanted to laugh or talk to him about.
Yeah.
And he really doesn't want to have anybody on and let them down because he knows he's got a platform that's fucking scary for a dude like me because like when I saw JP's I was like I know JP really well. I was like, oh, this is gonna be gnarly, like in a good way, but gnarly.
It was hard.
And for me with Chris, I'm gonna go there. Like
rad.
It's like
rad.
Yeah. So this is super fun because I can't go there.
Right.
Like or I won't, but Yeah, when I saw him during COVID started up, I was like, holy shit, man, you're doing it. You know, because we're all looking for, I'm not looking that hard for what's next.
Right, right.
But Chris owed it to himself and he did a favor to snowboarding to find this, find it, you know?
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah, so like when that came out, I talked with Mark Sullivan, and I always forget to mention Mark's podcast.
Oh, yeah, I've done Mark's. Yeah, it was fun talking to him.
Yeah, and Mark is, he's a consummate professional, and he's been doing it for quite some time, too. And he kind of called me and was like, these bomb hole guys, like, what do they think they're doing? And I was kind of like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's a free space.
Yeah, I mean.
And, there's no lack mentality here. So, like, keep doing yours, make yours good. And that's, you know, but I'm not saying I didn't feel the same thing. I was like, should I switch to should I get myself a studio? A lot of people come through Vancouver.
Yeah.
Should I, you know, harness that? But I'd already started traveling around.
Yeah.
And once I started traveling, I'm like, one time of doing this.
Yeah.
Like, there never used to be cameras. This, without the cameras, is so not nerve-wracking. You're in your home.
Yeah, that's...
You're just like, you're at your house.
Yeah, you guys...
You didn't take a drive to, or a flight...
To think about it, yeah.
...to a studio with lights, and now you go in, and there's people watching, like, oh, you're going to do great. I'm a big fan. Like, and you're getting questions from people that you're like, oh, my God, what's JP asking? Hey, what's the, you know, mentioning some most embarrassing thing that's ever happened in your life. And you're like, oh, yeah, talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, he basically just told it, so.
Yeah.
So I fell in love with this. Like, it was Ken Achenbach that in the first season that said to me that I, you know, and now I've got a new friend. And I remember being like, we just talked for an hour. We're not like friends. What do you mean?
But I'm quick to it too. So
We are. I mean, the thing is, I've been friends with them ever since.
Yeah, I follow. If I meet somebody, I'm following them on Instagram because I'm just like, ah, fuck. I'm a slave of this platform, and I'll play by the rules.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
or whatever my rules are, I'm just like, fuck.
Let's go to, because I am absolutely fascinated with how you came up with a formula that worked for you, that got you so...
Oh, it's not super hard. It's literally... I should let you finish that question because I think I know what you were saying, but the formula that got you to be known in snowboarding to a certain degree?
100%.
Yeah. You're going to do it anyways.
You came in through a side door and... And on top of that, you're a quirky rider your chosen genre is also quirk.
Well, here, how much would it suck if you had a quirky rider like this, but he didn't know where any of the tricks he was messing with, or it seems fraudulent almost, you know?
Yeah. Like, so there's authenticity there that is impossible.
People can do it, you know? Yeah. But like, yeah, I love it. I'm watching it anyway. So fuck, let's talk about it. Let's keep. But you know, I get to see it strangely with a new generation of these YouTubers.
Right.
And sometimes I'm like, could I do this?
Right.
And I'm like, fuck no. I think I'm from the old school where like, I don't want to be on film that much, you know? I don't want my personal life. Like, if you ever watch my social media, like, I'm giving you snippets of the best. I'm not showing you, like, when people are dying or, like, there's heartache or marriage is tricky or whatever, you know? So, like, I see these new guys coming up in an almost more elevated version of how I came up, a backdoor of how I came up, and I'm like, hats off, you guys are hard workers, but I'm glad I came up in this like middle ground of the old guard and this YouTube crazy guard of I'm totally not talking disrespect, but if I took a back door, these guys are going, they're fucking somewhere like in another fucking county.
They're thinking about an algorithm
when
they're doing what they're doing. Whereas you were thinking about the things you were doing and you're having fun and just genuinely putting them out.
Yeah, which
there.
Is no better, no worse. It honestly might. The thing that's backfiring just a hair in my age right now is I just love doing it so much that the fall is hard. It's.
You mean the fall as in like the fall off of
like just
being able to create like a viral clip?
Okay, that's inevitable. That's already like it takes a lot longer to get to a point where you're like, oh, because the kids have gotten so good. Stuff gets stuff gets mundane the more it's seen. That's yes. obvious.
Yeah.
So I am just grateful that I was a part of being able to get lower hanging fruit, which I don't even think of it as lower hanging fruit. It's just what it's a way I can explain it. But I came in where a lot of tricks were like, you could still develop tricks. Now it's like, it's their time. You know, if I can break off a little here and there.
Yeah.
Because I sure as hell didn't get into snowboarding to take out my idols. I like went there to ride alongside them.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, I wish some of my guys that I really looked up to were able to hang in there longer and just give us little bits. But snowboarding doesn't have that as much as skateboarding does, and that's okay.
Or surfing.
Because look, we don't have the numbers, so like, look at, there's, you just follow the numbers. This, I know, I don't want to go down the number trail, but like, you follow the numbers.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Like,
you know, I see it with just what brands put into BMX and surf and snow, and it's like, we're behind on the totem pole where skateboarding and...
Right.
So anyhow, like, I would love to have a long career, you know?
Got you.
All right. So we've run out of tape, which means we have to come back, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk.
Yeah, and I can talk. And we got lots more to talk about. Thank you for bringing it, dude. Like, it's been really nice to meet you.
Yeah, blacked out. Nice to meet you, too.
Yeah, you know what? It was... it's an eye-opener. It's kind of fun to get to know your story in real time. Like, that's dope.
Yeah, I could have gone either way. Snowboarding could have just kind of kept going gnarly, 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 but I probably wouldn't have got a break or a paycheck, which would have been fine, because I would have got a job doing something else, and then maybe my change from snowboarding to something else wouldn't have been as hard. But
yeah,
I'm in here now.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah. Well, you've got a solid following of fans.
Yeah.
What is next? What do you, it's probably, we don't have enough time.
I'll be quick and,
yeah.
You know, sometimes the way my body's working and people that, you know, climbing up in age will know this. And sometimes you just feel like, hey, what do I have to give? And how much more do I want to hurt this thing? And then sometimes I'm like, you know what? Strike when the iron's hot and do this a little bit longer, you know, because you love it and you always planned on kicking and screaming on the way out, so
that's perfect.
Yeah, that's real talk though, because like whenever you see a pro and you're like, man, he's washed, or why didn't he leave, it's not that easy, you know?
No shit.
Yeah
I can't even imagine how hard
it's not that easy. It almost feels like, I mean, death is the ultimate, but it feels pretty close to losing a part of your soul, you know?
Yeah.
But life still goes on, and I still, like, want to contribute to snowboarding and maybe do a little bit more behind the scenes, too.
I think you're a creative mind.
Yeah.
So we've seen creative minds from all generations of snowboarding, you know, create a little path.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing is I work really well when I have other people to get bounce things off and stuff. On my own, I get lonely, you know? So yeah,
I got you.
So yeah, you won't see me YouTubing by myself. That's not gonna happen.
Nice, dude.
But I do watch a lot of YouTubers and respect to those guys, because there's sometimes when a video part comes on, I'm tired of it. I'd rather hear somebody talk to me and tell me a story, you know?
I hear you, man.
So,
dude, Scotty, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Do one of these, yeah. I guess, now that we've got cameras rolling.
Yeah.
And we're coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we come through here every year. We'll do spring with you. Hopefully your knees will be...
Yeah, I'll have new stuff to talk about. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I just had a baby, so things have been pretty crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I can't even imagine.
That's... Yeah, a little knee injury is actually, they don't tell you this, but a little knee injury is actually pretty good for having a kid, because you get to really focus on being a good dad instead of, I got to go, you know, get on the chairlift, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's been good.
big transitions.
Yeah.
Rad. Thanks, yeah, man.
No problem.
All right.
F and Rad shout outs this week to Scott, his wife, and their kids for allowing us to take over their home for this interview. Thanks to everyone out there listening, and especially you guys who listen right to the end. I want to say a special thank you to Eric Hindman. Eric listened to every episode of the F and Rad podcast. Too fucking rad, dude. Thank you. Be sure to come back next week for another episode of F and Rad Snowboarding, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.